And now it's time to dip into the archives again with Roger Slipknot.
Hello again. I've been roaming through the BBC's archives and looking for hidden gems, those forgotten moments that passed away with nary a quick. This week, we look back at July 1978, when who should sit in for Simon Bates on Radio 1, with Batesy away on holiday, but the man himself, the Dark Lord Satan.
Across the nation, 275 and 285, Radio 1,
Dark Lord Satan.
And he is one of my favorites. It's the crazy world of Arthur Brown, and fire makes me feel right at home, that does.
I got Satan on the phone earlier and asked him what he remembered about his time at Radio 1. Week's stint take away from your usual work?
I was glad to take 3 weeks off from condemning souls to eternal damnation so that I could spin the tunes. I've always loved Radio 1, so it was a dream come true.
Now, did you have any regrets? And so, without any further ado, let's all enjoy this clip from July 14th, 1978, and the Dark Lord Satan has a few choice words with Robert Lively, his newsreader.
And that's Radio 1 Newsbeat at 3 minutes past one.
Radio 1! 275 and 285!
Now, hang on just a minute there, Robert. You don't think you're getting away with that now, do you?
What do you mean, Satan?
I heard you doing that story about Twiggy. You know I think she's a lovely girl.
She is a lovely girl.
I know she is. And you put in that story about her getting married just to make me mad, didn't you? You're a cheeky beggar, Robert Lively. Now get back into that newsroom before I condemn your soul to a life of torment.
Radio 6 International.
Now it's the Paul and Spike Show.
And after a 2 week absence, where we spent our time on the beach sipping margaritas and looking at lovely ladies, we are back. I'm Spike Nesmith, that man in the deer stalker, the corncob pipe, and the I Shot JR t-shirt is Paul Higginbotham.
Evening. Howdy. Good evening. How are you?
I'm feeling quite invigorated after our forced vacation.
Yeah, I was going to say, has it only been 2 weeks?
I know, it seems wild, but we should probably go into some detail to explain exactly where it was we were. Unfortunately, it wasn't on the beach looking at lovely ladies.
No.
It was staying at home, trying to kick a computer into submission to work. It was an absolute, I mean, utter disaster.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago, after recording what we both thought was a pretty decent show, your computer just decides to bite it, basically, right?
Yeah, and I should probably go back a little bit and explain something of the history of this computer. It's already a Frankenstein job, this thing. But it was given to me by a guy who is now an IT professional. At that point, he was working in radio still, and he was working for a syndication company. And part of his job was that he would oversee the equipment. You know, he was sort of trying to get everything wired and working, and they were tossing out several PCs, and he said, well, you know, how about you toss them into the back of my Durango, and I'll get what I want off them, and then I'll toss them out. So they said, well, they'll go to the dumpster anyway, knock yourself out. So he took this PC home and put some bits in it, and it's a nice piece. I mean, it was designed, I think, for fairly good, solid work, because it's got a 3 gig processor in it. Had a lot more. He kept the memory and then gave me the box. Jeez, more or less.
That's better than mine.
Yeah, well, you know, it should be a fantastic computer. But the reason he didn't keep it was, he said, this thing is trouble. It is an absolutely demonic, possessed PC, and I want nothing more to do with it. Because
the capital T that rhymes with P, and that stands for Pentium.
Exactly. This guy is the computer whisperer. I mean, there's nothing that this guy can't do. He lays hands on it and everything's fine. So for him to say that he can't fix it should have been an omen, or indeed a new one. So he gives me this and said, you're doing me a favor taking this and getting it out of my life. I don't want it anymore. I don't want to see it anymore. So I fired
As you walked away, he said, this house is clean.
Exactly. Yeah. I need a young drive and an old drive. So at the place I was at that point, I also had access to various bits and bobs of computers that were getting tossed out. So it was a nice sort of happy meeting of scrap metal, more or less. So
you're like the Sanford and Son back lot of computers.
Pretty much,
just,
yeah.
Just they're stacked everywhere.
Dad, what are you doing? I'm trying to install XP, dummy. So I
Amiga, I'm coming to join you. This is a big one.
I shoved the drive in it, and I installed Linux on it. And I thought, this is great. This is working. It's great. Fantastic. I'll go put XP on it. Now, this thing had a DVD burner on it, which I was very excited about because it was an internal DVD burner.
Yeah.
So I get home, try and install XP, nothing. It just wouldn't go. Even if the installation did take, then it would crash after a couple of hours, and it was just absolutely miserable. So I tried this a couple of times. Then I decided just to put Linux back on it, and Linux worked for a couple of months. That was the one that I used to do the Rage Machine with and play audio through.
Yeah.
And then eventually it gave up the ghost as well. Turns out, hideously long story, only slightly longer than it should be. There was some issue with the DVD burner. When I took the DVD burner out, the thing worked fine.
Huh.
No problem. Worked for ages. The only issue seemed to be whenever there was a power cut. When the power went off and I had a power surge, then that was the end of the story. And I had to try and get it to boot up into safe mode so that I could shut it down. And I'd have to do that a couple of times before it would sort of come back up to life. But over the past couple of months, it's just decided it's going to go weird again.
Yeah.
So we recorded our show last week. And just like you said, it seemed like a reasonably good show to me. And what I normally do is we record the show. Then the next morning, I'll edit it, put the music on and all that kind of stuff. All the sort of background stuff that you do to get it ready for air. And the best thing to do before you do any labor time processor intensive work is to restart it and bring it back up. So I restart the computer and it doesn't come back up. It's dead. Won't boot.
Deed.
It's a deed booter. So I have done everything in my power over the past week to try and get last week's show off in some form. And there's nothing else. I've learned my lesson the hard way. There's nothing else on that hard drive that's essential. There's no pictures. There's no files that I haven't got backed up somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Just the podcast was the only thing I needed to get off that drive. And I can't get it. It's like the drive now is some form of cancer. Because even when I put it in another tower, that computer messed up.
Yeah.
Wouldn't load, wouldn't do anything. Even, now this is the really scary part. even if the drive's just sitting in the enclosure and I've taken all the plugs out so there's nothing connecting it to the rest of the computer, even when it's just sitting in the cage, the PC won't boot up. But the minute I take it out, it's fine. I don't understand it.
That's hilarious.
So, cancer drive is now sitting over there, and maybe one day, it's just become a challenge now, maybe one day there'll be a way to take the show off it. When we're
Ship it to me. I'll play with it. It's okay. A risk of you know, introducing the cancer to my computer.
So long as you take it out, then it's fine. It's the testicular cancer of hard drives. Once you lop it off, everything's all hunky-dory.
Your story about the power outage, I don't know why that just, and the hinky computer reminds me of my first car and the stereo that I put in it. My first car was a 65 VW Bug, which was just awesome. But when I bought it, it was 100% original. It didn't even have a radio in it. Wow. I mean, it still had the original plate that covers where the old AM radio would have gone in the dash. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being the teenager that I was, I thought, I can't have a car without a stereo. So I bought this really nice car stereo and had it installed because I was and still am too inept to do such things. And it worked great. The stereo sounded fantastic. If it weren't for the fact that 65 Volkswagens didn't produce the proper voltage for then modern stereos. So what would happen is I would be driving along on my merry way, listening to my favorite tunes, my long playing cassette in my brand new car stereo. And anytime I would hit the brake, the radio would go out. Because the amount of voltage required to illuminate the brake lights was just enough to pull the voltage away from the radio so that it wouldn't work.
Wow.
I mean, it was hilarious. And what was really annoying is if you were listening to FM radio, you know, you would going down the road, I'd hit the brakes and all of a sudden it would go out and it would come back on. And of course, because it would lose all power, all the presets would be gone. So if I were listening to a good song and crank it up on the radio, I'd come to a stoplight and hit the brakes and all of a sudden let off the brakes. It would be really loud static in my car from 88.1, whatever it was.
Oh, the lowest frequency.
So that was brutal. That was my fantastic first car radio experience. I mean, every time you hit the brake, it would just go off. It was brilliant. I finally got a converter in there to fix the problem, but it was hilarious the first few months of driving that thing.
Wow. How long ago was that?
That would have been 88-ish. No, I'm sorry. That would have been 86-ish.
Wow. See, I'm thinking, yeah. I mean, if that's an original 1965 Volkswagen Beetle, you'd think that the resale value of that would be fairly high, even in the late 80s.
Yeah, it would be now. I mean, especially because it was in pretty decent shape. It wasn't in great shape, of course, because it was, you know, 20 years old at the time, but or 21 years old, I guess. But still, it was a sweet car. I miss it. The radio that went off every time you touched the brakes. It was beautiful.
Your car was old enough to drive.
Exactly.
Whatever happened to it? Did you sell it?
Yeah, I ended up selling it.
Did you make a good profit on it?
No, I didn't, unfortunately.
Oh.
But I ended up going, when I started college, the college was like an hour away. And mom said, that's a really neat car, but I don't want you driving it an hour, you know, one way and an hour back every day. It's just not going to last. Because it had, you know, it was an old car. It had a lot of mileage on it. So ended up having to get rid of it to get something a little bit newer. But definitely wasn't as fun as the old Bug.
That's what my mom says about my current van. She's terrified of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's got enough miles now where the clock has rolled over 3 or 4 times. So it looks like it's low mileage, but it's actually just lapped itself.
Oh, man.
I haven't had a spare tire, like a proper spare tire underneath that thing for about a year and a half. See, it broke one day. And Mrs. Spike was driving it. And I get a phone call. So she didn't know where the tire was because it's not inside the trunk. On these minivans, it's underneath.
Right, like pickups.
Right. So the guy who sold us the car, who, quite frankly, if I ever see him again, then I'm going to be in jail because I've had nothing but hassle from that heap of gunk since we got it. he showed me where the spare tire was, and I had sort of stuck in my head. I remember where it was, so I'm coming and I'm winding this thing down, and the spare descends to the road, and then I can't get the centerpiece out, so we end up having to call AAA anyway. I missed out on my man moment changing a tire. One of the few things in a car that I can actually comfortably do. Yeah. And I didn't get to do it because I couldn't get the centerpiece out.
Oh, no.
But it's not had a proper spare tire on it for a year and a half. It's making a funny noise. Now the horn doesn't work. So, and the worst part is that the inspections this month.
Oh.
So I'm faced with a challenge. I know I can probably get away with not taking it in for an inspection for about another month.
Yeah.
Before I start getting pulled over, but I've said before what the police are like up here in Bedford Falls,
mm-hmm.
and they're bored.
For
want of a less polite expression in polite company, they're bored. So,
and always looking for revenue.
Right, exactly. Sure. You know, you hear four sirens screaming down the road, it's because someone's double parked somewhere. It's, you know, this is not a high crime area.
You need to stand close by while they're doing the inspection and just watch very carefully. And then when they go to touch the horn, just honk.
Was that you, sir? No, it wasn't me.
No.
I wish I had this, and this is why my mom's terrified, because this is the car that I drive my kids in. I wish I had a friend like the guy that my friend Fraser knew. I don't know if he still knows him, but back in Scotland, where your inspection's known as your MOT, he would...
You down with MOT?
Oh, you know me. If you went in and you bunged him 20 quid, then he'd give you a sticker. Wouldn't even ever have to look at the car.
Oh, they're around here too. You just need to find them.
Really?
They'll do that, yeah.
Yeah, and I need to find one of those. So answers on a postcard to keep me legal competition.
The usual address.
The police will be out after me for that now. Soliciting a crime now.
Please put potential misdemeanor in the subject line. Thank you very much.
It's a miracle that guy never got caught. Mind you, might be caught by now. I mean, it's been 10 years.
It's more
years
common than you would think. I mean, the good old boy system.
Right.
Yeah. If you find the right person, they'll do it for you.
Yeah. So it's been a fun week news-wise, a fun couple of weeks news-wise, really. I mean, there's been a few things going on. We talked a little bit about Miss California last week, but nobody heard it but us.
Exactly.
When you think about it, it's not really that much different.
Just another week.
Right, exactly. Double the audience will open the window and see if the neighbors can hear us.
Oh, first off, what are you drinking, by the way?
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah,
what's
I have
the beverage?
My last Miller Lite. I thought I was going to be alcoholless for this show because I'm all out of wine. I'm so lost without you. But my box wine's gone. My bottle of wine's gone. And I was looking in the fridge for something completely different this afternoon. And there it was at the back. And it was like a movie because it was standing in front of the light. It was like, oh, there was the one solitary beer smiling at me.
Nice.
So I'm about very halfway
good.
Through.
That's
my
exactly
Miller
what I'm drinking too, by the way, Miller Lite as well.
All right.
Although I've already had a head start because I fired up the grill tonight. The Paul's law of grilling dictates that you must imbibe some alcohol in the grilling process from preparation on. So I've already had a lovely margarita, a homemade margarita. So
nice.
Yeah.
And you had turkey burgers.
Yes, sir.
Were they good?
Oh, they were fantastic.
You know, when you told me that you were making turkey burgers for dinner, I'm like, oh, that does sound kind of nice. And I've got these frozen, they're raw, but they're frozen turkey burgers downstairs. And I went, I'm going to have one of them for dinner. You know, and it's nice and healthy.
Yeah.
A far healthier option than, 50-50 beef that squeaks when you bite it.
Uh-huh.
So, you have an audience.
Yeah. there's little Higginbotham popping in there saying hello. What are you doing? You doing your show? Yep.
That's like, are you sleeping? Not anymore.
Exactly. Yeah.
I did the turkey burgers on my George because I don't have a barbecue. So I did it on the George and I thought, this is great. I'm going to have brown bread and it's going to be a nice healthy dinner and I can start feeling better about my diet. And then my taste buds got the better of me. And instead of just enjoying a turkey burger with brown bread and being healthy, I had to put mayonnaise and full-fat cheese and pepperoni on it.
Oh, of course.
So there goes all the benefits that might come from it.
Oh, that's all right.
But it was nice.
Yes.
So plenty of other news stories going on this week. But instead, I'm a-picking.
And I'm a-grinning. Hey, Spike, did you see in the news where it turns out that Vincent Van Gogh's missing ear might have been cut off by his friend Paul Gauguin in a fencing match?
Yeah. You know, the two met afterwards for a drink, and Paul Gauguin offered to buy Van Gogh a drink to make up for it.
Oh, really? And did Van Gogh take the drink?
No, he said, no thanks, I've got one ear. So, Paul, I hear that porn star Stormy Daniels is considering a run for the U.S. Senate.
Really? A porn star in the Senate? That's wild.
Yeah. Do you know what the difference between a congressman and a porn star is?
No.
One will do anything for money, and the other has sex on camera.
Like, it would be pretty wild if porn star Stormy Daniels did make it to the Senate.
That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, she could go from screwing co-stars to screwing constituents.
Hey, Paul, did you hear that Miss California could be stripped of her crown?
Yeah, I heard something about that.
You know, she should be careful. I saw those pictures, and there wasn't much left on to strip.
Hey, Spike, did you hear that after spending over $300,000 of taxpayers' dollars to photograph Air Force One over Manhattan, the White House now is not even going to release the photos?
Yeah, I wonder why not.
Apparently, the lens cap was on.
For this week and stuff, which I feel like I need to remind you of all the different stuff that we do on the show, because it's been a couple of weeks since you've actually heard one, and it's been a couple of weeks since we've done one, so it helps to sort of keep ourselves fresh.
Yeah, the last show we did was the day after I got my brand new ColecoVision, I think, so
that's right. It's
been a while.
Yeah. I was still rocking it out with my Commodore VIC-20.
Yes, sir.
Happy days. Happy days. This Week in Stuff is where we tear around all the stuff that we're watching and playing and reading and all that kind of jazz, so that you can play along at home, play the Paul and Spike show at home, and you can also be the Never Was, crowned the king of Never Wases in the world of broadcasting.
the stuff that we're into.
That's right. So what you've been into this week?
Oh, let's see. A little bit of everything. And by the way, coming up, we do have an over-under, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll do that, later on. Let's see. What have I been into this week? Well, TV-wise, no new TV shows, but some old TV shows, as always. Picked up some Hong Kong Phooey.
Number one super guy.
You can't beat that cartoon, really. I mean, a kung fu fighting dog voiced by Scatman Crothers. Does it get any better? Really?
Not really. Just
fantastic. That's so much fun. Hanna-Barbera.
You can always sort of disgust your neighbors and co-workers and saying, guess what I watched last night? I've got a DVD of a scat movie. Oh, yeah.
Yes. So that's what I've been watching, which is pretty funny. Love the Hong Kong Phooey. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Reading, I finally finished the book, The Name of the Wind by Patrick Rothfuss.
So what was The Name of the Wind? Ruin it for us. Go on.
No spoilers.
Oh,
all right. It was Jerry.
Ah.
But actually, I talked a little bit about the book on the show that never will be, because the one we lost it. But if you're into fantasy at all, it's a fantastic book. It's a tale within a tale, really well-written fantasy. And it's the first of the trilogy, too. So although it doesn't have a cliffhanger ending, when you get to the end of it, you're like, oh, come on. Where's the rest? And I think it's due sometime. The second one is due sometime this year. I'm not sure what it is.
It's like a soap opera anyway. In print.
Exactly.
I need to tell you my great spoiler story really quickly.
Okay.
I don't want to intrude on your stuff, but a couple of weeks ago I went to the movies to go and see some Nicolas Cage movie that isn't really even worth talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But credits start rolling, and these two teenage girls come bounding in, clearly just left another movie, and come bounding into the theater doing that deal where you buy one ticket, but you go and see four films. You spend the whole day there.
Yeah.
And that particular cinema complex doesn't have any real security, so you could easily go from one screen to another and nobody would really know.
Yeah.
So I'm putting my jacket on, get ready to leave, and they come running in and sitting in the front seat, and I went, you know what? That's not on. You know? I paid good money to see this movie and it was rubbish, and now they're going to come and see rubbish for free? That's just not on.
That's not fair.
I was putting my jacket on and I walked past them and I walked over and I said, by the way, he dies at the end. And walked out. And they looked suitably upset. But you know what? You go and see a movie for free, you expect to have it spoiled.
Oh, that's funny.
Anyway,
Snape
back to
kills Dumbledore. Okay. Let's see. What else? Okay, other than that book, that's about as far as reading. Been playing a lot with my new DSi, which is a whole lot of fun. Something else I mentioned last week on the show, but the show that was destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
But the DSi, of course, is Nintendo's update to their DS Lite, the little handheld gaming system. And it's really a neat little gadget. I like it more and more as I'm playing it. I've been playing some fun games. Grand Theft Auto Chinatown, which is absolutely hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
It Grand Theft Auto Chinatown is although the game just came out this year, it's sort of reminiscent of the original GTA games with the top-down view, you know, that kind of thing. And it's a brilliant game. It's one of the best games for the DS. So say the reviews and many of the players.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't played enough to really say so one way or the other, but it is a hoot. It's a ride of a game. And the writing is hilarious, too. This Asian guy comes over to the U.S. and his uncle is it's this drug lord or whatever. So he starts working for him. And, of course, when he first finds out his uncle, what his uncle does, he says, "Uncle, you're a drug lord." And the uncle says, "An honorable drug lord." it's just that kind of stuff. And then the nephew's like, "Oh, is there any other kind?" You know, just that kind of writing. Right. But it really is a brilliant game. And the DSi has lots of cool little gadgets. You can actually play music files, although Nintendo chipped out and only lets you play AAC formatted files. You can't play MP3s, which really stinks
because
everybody uses MP3. But you know, once you get the AACs there, you can really have a lot of fun with them because you can speed up songs, you can slow them down, you can increase the pitch, lower the pitch, you can put different effects, like you can make it sound like an old radio, you can put echo on it. So I mean, there's a lot of cool little toys just to fart around with when you're playing. And you can also record stuff with a microphone, so you can record little voice snippets up to, I think, 10 to 12 seconds or something, and then you can play those back and change your voice and do all sorts of things with them. So
nice. It's like 21st century Mr. Microphone.
It is.
Hey, baby, I'll be back to MP3 you. I'll be back to email that file to you later.
Exactly. And it's got cameras where you can take pictures and things like that, and you can move the pictures on a computer, and you have the little camera effects, like little mirror effects or kaleidoscope effects or funhouse mirror effects and all sorts of little things that you can kind of, you know, play around with for a couple of hours before you get bored. But but the DSi, a whole lot of fun. I recommend it, especially if you don't have a DS Lite. If you already have a DS Lite, I'm not really sure it's worth the $170 price tag to upgrade. You may want to wait till your DSi just, or your DS Lite just corks it or something, or until the battery goes down so low that you have to replace it. Mm-hmm. Maybe then upgrade. But I didn't have a DS Lite, so it's a natural, it was kind of a no-brainer, so I picked it up and having a lot of fun with that.
It's not different enough then to use it as an upgrade. It's more a sort of replacement.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the cameras are neat, but I only played with those for a little while. The music player is neat, but because it's AAC format only, I can't see myself ever using it as using it a lot as a music player because all the files I have right now are in MP3 format. So I would have to convert them before I put them on there. Mm-hmm. So while it's kind of nice to have, you can put in an SD card, which is another thing the DSi has that the DS Lite doesn't, is an SD card slot. So you've got expansion. Mm-hmm. So you could, you know, I've got a card in there and I put a few songs on it. So it's kind of handy in a pinch if you just want to plug in headphones and listen to a song without getting up and going to your computer to listen or getting your MP3 player or whatever. It's kind of nice to take for traveling if you want to put a few songs on it or anything. But most people already have a music player of some sorts. So those features alone don't really make it worth ditching your DS Lite, especially if your DS Lite is still relatively new or in good condition.
Yeah, I mean, if that's what you wanted, there's actually an add-on you can buy for the... It'll even work on the original DS that will play mm-hmm. MP3s, and it plays movie files as well, I believe.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah, but it's not something that's sold especially well, so you have to kind of look for it a little bit online, but and you know, but it has a little expansion slot as well where you can put your SD card as well.
And the bad thing is it doesn't have the Game Boy Advance slot anymore. So if, as a DS Lite owner or an original DS owner, if you have a lot of Game Boy Advance games that you still play on it, you're going to lose that functionality with the DSi because they got rid of the slot.
Yeah.
So no more of those games. But it's a fun little toy. A lot of fun games out there for it that I've been playing around with. Of course, anybody who owns a DS Lite's already been playing most of these games already anyway. So there are... most of the games I have for it are older, but the GTA Chinatown is definitely worth a look. Mm-hmm. Fun game.
Is there added stuff on the DSi with getting all in this like initial time here? Does the DSi have add-ons for GTA?
No.
It doesn't, so it's not... Yeah. There's no added functionality to the game going from DS Lite to DSi?
No, I don't think there's anything out right now, any DS games out right now that have any features unique to the DSi. Mm-hmm. Now, I've heard that might be coming down the road. There might be some games that have DSi bonus features. Like I heard about a cooking game. I don't know if it's out yet or if it's due out this year or something like that, where if you have a DSi, you can use the camera to take a picture of yourself, and then that becomes your avatar in the game. Becomes your character. Now, if you have a DS Lite, you can still play the game and do everything in the game. You just don't have that option of customizing your avatar to look like you. So
hardly a deal breaker, though, is it?
No, exactly. I mean, the game itself is going to be the same. So I think maybe this year and down the road, you're going to see more games that have those little bonus features. But other than the DSi download store, which lets you use your DSi once you connect it to the internet, and hop online and shop for games and buy games, which have all been complete shite so far, by the way. Thank you, Nintendo. Other than those games, I don't think you're going to find any DS games that you won't be able to play on the DS Lite, at least not for the foreseeable future.
So these are all games that you've bought that have sucked?
Yes.
You know, that's something that, let me just intrude again very briefly, and part of what we were talking about last week was that you now have a DSi and that I have a Wii now, which is kind of exciting. And I've noticed the big difference between the way that Nintendo works and the way that Sony works with the PlayStation Store is that now with the PSP, you can get online with the PlayStation Store. You can download all sorts of demos for games that are coming up and, you know, game trailers and all that kind of stuff. The Nintendo channel on the Wii, and I don't know if it's the same on the DSi, you can watch videos of games that are coming out, you can see interviews, but you can't actually download anything for free.
Yeah.
And I know that sort of typical Scotsman here looking for the freebie, but it makes a big difference playing a game and checking out the demo of a game than it is just watching a video of somebody else playing it for 30 seconds.
That is true for Wii games, but what's funny is that you can use your Wii as a download station for your DS.
Yes.
So you can download DS demos via your Wii.
It is kind of cool, that.
In a manner of speaking. But yeah, so that's kind of neat. But
it's like going to the doctor with this. Well, Mr. Higginbotham, we've taken your sample, and I'm afraid you have DS samples in your Wii.
Exactly. but so that's kind of neat. But you're right. There's the Nintendo has written off online play and online features for the most part. They just don't care about it, or they just don't get it, because both Sony and Microsoft blow them away in that department, both in demos, in marketing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had a 360 for a couple of years, and every time you turned on the 360, it sounds annoying, but it really isn't. But you would get an ad for a game that was coming up, and often it's a game that you could purchase online. So you would see what new games are available, which I think is kind of neat, because you want to know about the new games.
Right.
You fire up the Wii, and there's even if you go to the Wii channel, there's really no marketing. There's no announcement like, hey, this is brand new, this just came in today, check this out, or here's a demo of this, you can try for free for a few days. I mean, there's nothing like that. I mean, you're on your own to do the research line or hear it from a friend, and then you go actually hunt the game down and find it. And so far, the DSi has been the same way. I mean, I've never seen anything on my DSi that says, hello, there's a new game here, you may want to come check it out.
Yeah, you have to physically go into the Nintendo channel to find out if there's anything new. But it really, I mean, it really completely blew my mind, because I come from the, you know, ye olden days where you went down to the news agents and you got, you know, Zap 64, and it had the little cassette tape to the front with demos on it. And then the, you know, the Amiga things and the Mac things that had the disc on the front. And it had all sorts of demos and fun little things that were just free. And I tell you, the number of games that I bought because it had a playable demo, because you had a game that you could actually go in and play and see the gameplay. Sure. And, you know, I mean, a great recent example is Loco Roco on the PSP. That was the first demo that I downloaded onto my PSP, and I played and played and played that demo for months until I eventually just went out.
Played it till your fingers bled?
Yeah, pretty much. That was the summer of 09. I got the game. I bought the game. I spent money. And it's not... I had seen it advertised. Didn't really look all that good. I'd seen it on in the store, and I'd seen the, you know, the displays, and just thought, yeah, kid's game. But I can't tell you the number of hours that I spent playing that demo, and they got a sale out of it that they wouldn't normally have had.
Yeah. Yeah, Nintendo's just lagging far behind when it comes to stuff like that. So what stuff have you been into, other than more Loco Roco?
Well, I've been playing, Beige. Oddly enough, a demo on the PSP called, let's get this right now, Echo Chrome, which is the strangest demo I've ever seen in my life. But it's a very intriguing game, and also something else that I wouldn't have given a look to unless I actually got my grubby mitts on it to play it, because as a concept, it sounds ridiculous and dull. You've got these 3D shapes. It's almost like a sort of like an H.R. Giger painting where the perspective's off. And what you have to do is you rotate the shape until the perspective lines up, and you've got a wee guy walking. So he might go up a flight of stairs and then walk along a longer section, and then you have to meet that up with the section that he came from down at the bottom so that it looks like a path.
Oh.
It's weird, and there's other levels where there's a gap in the path and you have to rotate it round to where there's a big block, blocks the hole, and once you block that hole, one, you know, out of vision, it's no longer a hole. It's all, it's visual perspective. What you can see exists, and what you can't see doesn't exist. And it's a really strange but very addictive wee game.
See, I love stuff like that, because games like that, unique games like that, are so few and far between anymore.
Mm-hmm. And it's a real thinker as well. It's not something that you pick up and you're done within a, you know, a couple minutes. There's times where you have to actually pause it and really kind of look at it. And luckily, it's literally a stop and think function.
Oh, nice.
You hit the button and your wee guy just sort of stops and scratches his head, and you can rotate the map around and put it in different directions so that you're not necessarily up against the clock.
Oh, that's cool.
On these other levels, which is good. So that's been interesting. I got Pro Evolution Soccer 08 for the Wii.
Yes.
And haven't even tried it yet. I got it two weeks ago and I haven't tried it yet, because I've always been since the days of FIFA, I think FIFA 97 was the first one that I got on the PS1.
Yes.
And just played that thing until the disc broke from spinning too much, pretty much. Mm-hmm. So I've been a FIFA guy for a long time. So to buy a non-FIFA football game for any format is strange to me.
Wow.
And the controls are so different that I don't want to just sort of pick it up and spend 5 minutes on it. It's something I really need to spend an afternoon with to get comfortable with. So I haven't put it in the machine yet.
Which fortunately, it has some cool tutorials. It actually leads you through it, which is nice.
That's good.
Yeah. Little practice sessions and stuff.
Yeah. I like the fact that it's got a lot more control than FIFA, because sometimes the artificial intelligence in FIFA just lets you way down. You know, your guys are running away from the ball for some reason, you know, and you end up being like, you remember the Saturday Night Live sketch with Jim Belushi being Bobby Knight, the high school chess coach, throwing chairs and going, why don't you just give him the king? Give it to him.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it's like with the artificial intelligence. But with this, you can literally point at your wee guys. You know, you have a defender, you point, you click, and you say, I want you to go here right now to receive this pass. Mm-hmm. So it's become more sort of user intelligence.
Yeah, it's neat.
So I'm looking forward to getting gubbed at that in the next couple of days.
Yeah, it's a whole lot of fun.
And that is something that you can play online, right?
No, I don't think so. Hmm. I don't think so. I'll have to double check.
Okay.
But the cool thing about that game is that, you know, everybody makes a big deal about the Wii motion controls and how you can use the infrared pointer and motion sensor and all that stuff to make the games more fun. But the games, there aren't really a whole lot of games that use it well.
Right.
Most of them use it just as a gimmick. But there are some games out there, and PES 8 is one that is one of the good ones that actually... You can tell they made it just for the Wii, that they sat down and they said, okay, we're going to make the best of these controls.
We're going to Wii invent the wheel.
There you go. and you can tell that it was made for the Wii from the ground up, and the controls are just perfect. I mean, they work very well, mostly intuitive, although you do have to learn some combos and, okay, to hit A or B here or both, or do I flick the little joystick on the nunchuck or whatever. But once you get those down, I mean, the pointing and the moving is very intuitive. The quick little flick for the shot mm-hmm. is very neat. I mean, it's done well.
Mm-hmm.
So kudos to them.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to having a go of that. I've been playing Rayman Raving Rabbits.
That game's pretty funny.
Which is good fun. Nintendo have really cornered the market well for games that are made up of a bunch of mini games.
Yeah.
Like the
party games.
Yeah. And they're always good. Wario, the original Wario touched on the DS was hilarious, and the Wario Wii games a riot as well, because it's so totally random and so fast. You know, you've got 10 seconds to pluck a hair out of a giant nose, and you know, 5 seconds to hit a cat in the face with a mallet. It's just
sounds like my morning routine, really.
Right. That's my weekend.
Exactly. My weekend.
Oh, there you go. So that's been good fun. I've enjoyed the Wii so far. And I said last week. Yeah. I said last week on the show that hopefully we can salvage at some point and then sell it through Time Life for a ridiculous amount of money as the show you've never heard. I'm looking forward to a decent quality tennis game coming out, because that, out of all the sports that you can play on a computer, of all the simulated sports, tennis is one that you could really say is made for the Wii. That's the game that you can play that's probably the most genuine representation of the movement that you would have to do in the real game.
Yeah. And there are a couple coming out this spring or summer. I think June or July is when I think there's a EA tennis game coming out mm-hmm. that's going to use the new Wii Motion Plus, the little dongle that plugs into the remote to make it more of a 1-to-1 movement ratio, more accurate mm-hmm. response and stuff like that. So there should be a couple with the new motion system coming out this year. Should be pretty neat.
That's going to be good. Reading wise, I've started a book that Dad left for me that I might pass on to you once I'm done. I can't remember the title or the author, because I meant to bring it up with me and I didn't. And I can't remember what it's about. I do know it has pages and words.
It's a pretty blue cover.
Right. There's a face on the cover and there's no pictures.
Okay.
Great book.
I'll check that out.
It's a book about presidential campaigns.
And
it was written in the early 80s, so it goes up to Reagan's first victory, but it covers how all the presidents campaigned, what the actual election was like, what the results were. Lots of great wee historical factoids that you wouldn't necessarily hear because they wouldn't be important to the bigger picture.
That's neat.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great history. If you're a history buff, and particularly a presidential history buff, it's a great book because it's filled up with these, the minutiae of the campaigns and that kind of thing. So that's interesting. TV-wise, I haven't really watched anything new. I've been working my way steadily through the Hancock's Half Hour box set, which I caught, which has the remaining 20-odd episodes out of, 40 that were made.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been restored and they all look good. And it's a great testament to something that is now, the earlier episodes are now 50 years old, and it's a great testament to the writing and the performance that you can sit down and watch it. And there's elements of it that have dated, but on the whole, it's still funny and it still stands up, and it's, there's some absolute classics.
And cool.
I think I might have sent you some years ago, some of the radio version of that, of Hancock's Half Hour.
I think so. Didn't you give me those on cassette or something like that?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah. But the last season that he made by himself, he used to do it with a guy called Sid James, who was in the Carry On movies.
Mm-hmm.
And he eventually... Hancock gets a lot of flack for this. He said that he didn't want to become a double act, and basically told Sid James where to go, which is sort of a pattern of behavior because there used to be more people involved in the radio version. There was Hancock, and there was Sid James, and there was an Australian guy called Bill Kerr, and a woman called Hattie Jakes, and that was sort of, I mean, it's his show, but it was kind of an ensemble. And when it transferred to TV, it was just him and Sid James, and then when it was the last series of Hancock on TV, it was just him by himself. Which he gets a lot of flack for from people because it seems very heartless. And the comedian Spike Milligan had said that the pattern was that he closed the door on Bill Kerr and he closed the door on Sid James and he closed the door on his writers when he moved to ITV and then closed the door on himself when he topped himself in Australia. But when you look at the last series of Hancock, it's really very obvious that it was probably the right decision to make, because whenever anybody talks about Hancock, they always talk about the blood donor, they talk about the one that he did completely by himself, and those are all in the last season.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to the writers, apparently, look, I'm fed up being the butt of the jokes, I'm fed up being the sort of, hapless loser and always getting taken in by Sid's hilarious money-making harebrained schemes. Let's take it out of the house, take it out of the set, take it out of the sort of comfortable atmosphere and do something else. And he was absolutely right on the money. Those last episodes are genius all the way around.
And then he said, I want to rock.
What do you want to do with your solo TV project? So that's been fun plowing my way through those. And Mrs. Spike has become obsessed with the Twilight books.
Oh no.
So I got to see the Twilight movie last night, which was all right.
Yeah.
I expected.
Did you write in your diary afterwards?
Yes.
Dot all of your I's with hearts.
Painted my bedroom black and put Morrissey on. It wasn't bad. I mean, for a teen movie about vampires, it was all right.
Yeah.
It has a style all of its own. So I'm probably going to pick up the first book and read it.
Yeah.
But she's plowed through the first three in the space of a week and a half.
Yeah.
So she's well into it. Oh, no. So I'm thinking tonight I'm going to get a set of fangs and a cape and we'll see where that goes.
Yes.
Yes.
Good luck to you.
Okay, we'll do over under coming up in a moment.
Radio 6.
Over and under, over and under.
Wonder Time, as the very pleasant voiced singer has so far informed you, where we take something, a genre or something else that I can't think of, and we pick one thing that's overrated within it, one thing that's underrated within it. And what do we decide on today?
Cartoons from childhood.
Okay. That's what I was thinking. I couldn't remember if we were going to be specific about Hanna-Barbera cartoons. Maybe
no,
that's just what I've got in my head.
That could be.
Okay, well, I'll let you go first. Since you've been watching Hong Kong Fooey, I'll let you go first.
Okay. Well, my overrated, I was going to go with the Smurfs for overrated, but that's just too easy. Because nobody liked the Smurfs.
Right.
Well, somebody did, apparently, because it went for several seasons, and those little goofy figures sold like crazy at Hallmark's all over the place. But that was just too easy of a target because, I mean, the Smurfs are just the Smurfs. I mean, they're too easy to pick on.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going for a target that, although the rose-colored glasses of nostalgia allow me to watch this now, still with a little bit of adoration, and I did because I liked it so much as a child. If you take away those glasses and watch it with any objectivity at all, they're just absolutely dreadful. And those are the original Super Friends cartoons.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice. You know, I mean, gosh, you watch these shows and it's absolutely horrible. I mean, it's like the plots were written by fifth graders. They don't make any sense at all. They're completely silly. And this is an original thought. It isn't an original thought because I once heard somebody say something to this effect, but it was so true. It's like, yeah, they had the Legion of Doom with all the bad guys, mm-hmm. but why not just send Superman after all of them?
Right.
I mean, you know, when the Joker starts running around town, you know, why send Batman and Robin? Just send Superman, because the Joker can't do anything to him. You know, not Chitara, that's from Thundercats, but when whatever the cheetah woman was who was Wonder Woman's foil.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
When she takes off running around, send Superman after her.
Maybe you it's know. Something, maybe they were all sort of part of a domestic dispute. You know, they're sitting there in the Hall of Justice reading the Daily Globe or whatever. And Superman goes, oh, that's the Joker out again. That's your problem, Batman. Away you can get him.
Yeah.
And Batman goes, well, they haven't let that man out, have they?
Maybe it was a union thing. Maybe it was like, sorry, I got to take this one. You know, Batman's like, sorry, it's in my contract. You're not allowed to touch the Joker. I got to go get him. So I don't know. But they, as much as I loved comic books as a kid and as much as I still love, you know, the superheroes and that kind of thing, and I would really love to watch them and enjoy them now, even through the tint of nostalgia, I just can't take them anymore. They're just so horrible. The voice acting is bad. Mm. The plots are dreadful. They just don't make sense. It pains me to say it, but the Super Friends was just flat out a bad cartoon all around.
There's a lot that time forgives, particularly when you look at something that you watched as a child, and you might not necessarily enjoy that show or that cartoon anymore, but it kind of reminds you of better times. But these cartoons, they were so po-faced, joyless, miserable, drawn-out garbage that there's absolutely no joy in them at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm like you. I hated them as a child, and I can't stand them now. When they showed, like, the original Space Ghost,
mm-hmm.
you watch it and you see that really bad kind of semi-animation where it's a static shot of his head but his mouth's moving. You know, or there's four frames of an arm moving and you just
see
thinking,
I kind of like Space Ghost. He's part of the Hanna-Barbera bunch, and I find it difficult to say anything bad about Hanna-Barbera because they pretty much defined my childhood.
But it was so much like those other cartoons where, you know, you're just like, come on, mix in a joke, do something funny, you know, have somebody yeah. hitting the Joker in the face with an iron and then his face is iron shaped or something. Just do something amusing to bring yeah. joy into my life.
The Super Friends. And then my underrated, which is going to sound kind of wild because in some circles it's not underrated, it's highly treasured, but I think for your average cartoon viewing person, your cartoon viewing Joe, it's underrated and unfortunately forgotten, and that is the old Star Trek the animated series.
Wow, yes.
Which came out shortly after the original series was canceled. And it didn't get much run. It only went a couple of seasons, not a whole lot of episodes. I think maybe like 20 episodes, 22, somewhere around in there.
Mm-hmm.
You never see it on reruns anymore. It's just been long forgotten by all but the most diehard Trek fans.
Mm-hmm.
But people either never knew because they never watched it or they just forget about it is the fact that the Star Trek animated series was voiced by most of the original actors.
Right.
From the show, even some of the guest stars, like Sarek, the guy who played Spock's dad,
mm-hmm.
the guy who played Mud, he was, I think he did his own voice on there. Harcourt Fenton Mud, I will tell you one last. But so it had great voice acting because, you had William Shatner's Kirk, Leonard Nimoy was there. A lot of the original actors were there, which is great.
Captain, the fact that my face is completely still, but only my mouth is moving is illogical.
Yes. But not only did it have many of the original actors from the show, but it was the episodes were written by the same writers who wrote the original TV show. So they're well-written shows. And while they did, because it was animation, they had more freedom and they could incorporate more goofy aliens and stranger worlds and things like that. So they went over the top a little bit because they could. They finally had the freedom to do so. They weren't limited by budget anymore. They could draw a planet or an alien however they wanted to,
right?
As elaborate as they wanted to and make it work. But so they did kind of push that a little bit. Almost like the 3D effect where you've got a scene in a 3D movie that's there only because it's in 3D.
Right.
Like a yo-yo coming at you. Yeah.
So I think the killer went that way. Yeah.
So they did. So they did go a little bit over the top just because they could. But at the same time, many of the episodes are very well-written episodes and they fit with the original series very nicely.
Mm-hmm.
Great shows, not just kid shows. The only knock they have really is that they were done by Filmation. Oh. And if you know anything about Filmation, you know that they were like the Chinese sweatshop of animation studios back in the day, because what they were famous for doing was they would make one shot, they would draw one scene and add that to their stock footage and use that like three times every episode. So you had the same scene.
They were economically conscious, that's all.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they were saving a ton of money because you would have one scene of like Kirk running and every time Kirk ran in an episode, it was that exact same scene of him running. Just the background was different. Or you'd see the Enterprise firing its phasers and almost just like the original TV show. It was the exact same shot of the Enterprise firing its phasers every time. Filmation was horrible for that, not just for Star Trek, but for everything they did, including that dreadful He-Man cartoon from the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
All the stock footage from that. But so that was really its only knock, was that it was that in a way it was cheaply done by Filmation because they were just horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But still, a very underappreciated TV show, very close to the original series, a very good companion to the original series. And quite frankly, I think a lot of the episodes that were in the animated series would probably have been episodes for the original series had they not been canceled.
I would imagine probably at least in the first series of the animated one, it's probably scripts that had been, if not already written, but planned for the TV show that they just carted over as being a cartoon.
Yeah, probably so. And some of them were just spin-offs, like there's another episode with Tribbles mm-hmm. in the animated series. So a lot of it were follow-ups or spin-offs or things like that. But yeah, they most of them were probably already in the incubation stage of scripts or something like that.
Wasn't it the case that the first Star Wars movie was originally the script for a pilot for a TV, that they were going to bring back the TV show in the 70s?
I'm not sure. I don't know.
I'm sure I read that somewhere that the
No, the first Star Trek movie was going to be the pilot. Yeah, not Star Wars movie.
Oh,
yeah.
See, I always do that.
I was going to say.
I mean, I know the difference. But
I don't, wait a minute, Star Trek? Star Wars? Where did Lucas come into this?
Right. someone must have waved the $20 bill that attracted Lucas coming running.
Yeah, Star Trek the motion picture.
Yeah.
The very first Star Trek movie. That was going to be the resurrection of the series. You're right. That was going to be the pilot. Unfortunately, it would have made a brilliant 60-minute TV show that was unfortunately squeezed into 2.5 hours.
Right.
Well, it just goes on and on and on and on and on. And, you know, there's only so much of, you know, hot bald chick that you can get and enjoy before you finally say, is something going to happen now?
Is there a good Star? I'm going to be very conscious of saying this now. Is there a good Star Trek movie, or are they all useless?
Oh, no. Wrath of Khan is excellent.
Khan!
Exactly. From hell's heart, I stab at thee.
Is that the only good one, though?
Four was pretty enjoyable.
Right. What was the one with Spock on a bus?
That was four.
That was four, okay.
That's the general, the conventional wisdom is that even number Star Trek movies are good. But having said that, and even though the first one is incredibly, it's just too drawn out and too slow and it takes too long to develop, I still have an affection for that one because it is the first time, you know, the cast is back. You know, there's that scene where you see the Enterprise in the space dock, and you're like, you know, as a old Star Trek fan, you're like, oh, that's neat. There she is. You know, and when they first fire up the warp engines, there's that kind of thing. But so I like the first one, even though it's not a good film by any measurement. But the Star Trek II is definitely the high mark, the high water mark for those, for the movies. Mm-hmm. The rest I can't care about. And quite frankly, the new one, I mean, it looks like Fast and the Furious in space, this whole reboot thing that J.J. Abrams has done or whatever. I mean, it looks like Star Trek 90210.
The Fast and the Phaserous.
Exactly. it just looks dreadful. And I keep hearing people rave about it. It's getting a lot of good early reviews from the early screenings. But the thing that bothers me as a huge fan of the original series is that most of the people who are raving about it aren't Trekkies, because it just completely throws the canon out the window. I mean, it completely chucks all of the quote unquote history. It just completely rewrites it, and not really interested in that.
I suppose in many ways, it's probably like the new Doctor Who. They're trying to attract a new audience. They're not necessarily interested in, I mean, they don't want to annoy the sort of, you know, stable of people who will watch it because, oh, it's a new Doctor Who, of which I must admit I was one of them. But they're not necessarily interested in tailoring a show specifically for me, who, quite honestly, it wasn't really worth watching after Peter Davison left. You've got Tom Baker. It wasn't worth watching before Tom Baker started, come to think of it. You've got your Tom Baker and you've got your Peter Davison episodes. You've got the promise of the Colin Baker episodes because they could have done more with that slightly unstable character. But the new Doctor Who's, they're good, but there's so many things that's wrong with it that's not proper Doctor Who. But they're making it for a different audience now. It's not for me. So maybe that's what the new Star Wars is. I did it again. That's what the new Star Trek is about, is that they don't want to completely alienate, no pun intended, the hardcore, geeky Trekkies. But at the same time, they want to get the teenagers, and they don't want the cinema full of coughing codgers.
Well, it looks like they've made every effort possible to set phasers for Boar Paul, so I don't... I think I'm just gonna pass that one up.
I didn't know they did that. All right.
What about you? What's your over-under?
My over... you may or may not take exception to this, but I'm gonna squeeze the rules, and I'm going to include two shows from my over because they're both so similar, and they both come from the same stable, and in fact they crossed over at one point.
Yeah.
Essentially just the same show with the time change. Uh-huh. The Flintstones and the Jetsons.
Oh, see, I almost went there with my over.
Really?
Yeah, I almost did, but I just couldn't do it. But the thought was there, so I'm not gonna fight you too bad on it.
These are shows that should have disappeared. I mean, it's, you never hear of the Groovy Ghoulies anymore.
Oh, great show.
Yeah, I mean, that was a reasonably good show, but you don't hear about it anymore. And that's sort of how the Flintstones should have gone, because it's so, I mean, it's just not funny for a start. I mean, I know it's supposed to be like the Honeymooners, and it's a nice, homage. But, yeah, you know, do that once and then forget about it. Don't draw it out to 4,000 miserable years of the same garbage.
It did go a little long.
It went a little long, and it wasn't even a particularly well-written show. I mean, it was always sort of vaguely amusing to see the sort of Stone Age take on things, like having the little bird as the record player and, you know, the elephant vacuum, and, you know, that would have been kind of amusing in a book, but as a whole cartoon, it's just dull.
I think it was really good up until, who was it, the Great Gazoo or whatever, that little Martian showed up and started doing all that. I think that's when it sort of jumped the shark, but the early ones were just, that sort of gets into the territory of what you and your dad and I discussed several weeks ago, and that is it's almost untouchable.
Yeah.
You know, to the point where it's almost beyond my judgment to say, well, the Flintstones is overrated. I don't know. I was never a huge Flintstones fan, but it's, you know, especially for the early episodes. I mean, you can't deny what a huge influence they had. I mean, that was like a primetime cartoon too, wasn't it? That wasn't like a Saturday morning deal. That was,
yeah, I think it was, you know, in prime time. Yeah. Maybe that's why it's so popular. Maybe whoever got the distribution rights it's in their financial interest to make sure that it's remembered as a classic, and people just don't want to argue with it.
I guess so. I can appreciate it, though, but it was never one of my favorites.
No. Now, I had trouble thinking about underrated because I'm not quite sure where the parameters are. Mm-hmm. I mean, because there's a lot of stuff that I watched as a kid that you probably wouldn't have seen.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff, you know, the Groovy Ghoulies is a good example where it's probably where it needs to be. Yeah. You know, saying that it's underrated is kind of a high compliment for a show, but quite honestly, seeing an episode of it once every 20 years is just about enough, I think.
Yeah, that's one that wouldn't really stand the test of time. I mean, it is what it is. It was a fun show back then, but, you know, not something that should have been and should still be critically acclaimed.
It's a nice kind of, it's like a time capsule. You look back on it and, you know, it's the music and the styles are interesting to see how it kind of manifests in cartoon form. And it's funny to, even with the older Scooby-Doos, it's funny to look at Shaggy and you see him as the sort of, you know, the trademark hippie, but really he was sort of quite factually accurate back in the day.
Sure.
You know, there were Shaggies running around all over the place.
Yeah.
So I think he was based
off like Dobie Gillis.
Maybe.
Like the Murnard T. Krebs character, whatever, in Dobie Gillis. Mm-hmm. Something like that. Yeah.
Well, see, Dobie Gillis was good. Slip Away was about my, that was my limit, really. I didn't really follow Dobie after that much. So I'm kind of stuck on my under. I can't think of anything in terms of being underrated that isn't probably about right, you know? Yeah. Most of the Hanna-Barbera stuff, you know, you couldn't say that Roadrunner was underrated. You couldn't say Tom and Jerry was underrated, you know, that kind of stuff. So I might have to, as they say in Domino's, I'm chapping on that one. You know, I might have to just sort of pass it.
Yeah.
But, you know, that might be a good phoner, as we say in the business.
Mm-hmm.
That might be something that we can talk about next week, that if our throngs of adoring fan want to get involved, then that might be something to discuss on the Facebook page or via email or something like that. You know, whether, you know, what cartoons that you think are underrated and overrated. What are the parameters that we're going to set, though? What counts as a cartoon? Because you couldn't say something like SpongeBob SquarePants is overrated because it hasn't had the same time to ferment as the Groovy Ghoulies has.
I would just say, you know, 60, 70, maybe like 65 through 85, you know, the what I would call the golden age of the Saturday morning cartoon.
Okay.
You know, when, of course, you know, although most of the Looney Tunes were from the 50s, but they really got to run on TV in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
I
would be very interested if someone can come up with a smart, compelling argument to say why something like Looney Tunes are overrated.
Oh, that's impossible.
Yeah, I mean, I would be interested to hear that, though, if there's someone that really honestly thinks that they're overrated.
Now, as much as I absolutely adore Hanna-Barbera, I think one could easily make a case that many of their series were overrated because Hanna-Barbera, they were the kings of recycling.
Yeah.
I mean, if you remember, like, so many of their shows were almost the same. Like, you had Scooby-Doo and then you had Speed Buggy.
Right.
Well, Speed Buggy was exactly the same as Scooby-Doo. I mean, you had the red-haired goofball.
Yeah.
Tinker, who was just like Shaggy. Mm-hmm. Then you had the male lead, who all he did was go from blonde to black hair. Then you had, you know, the hot chick, and then you had the not so hot chick who was smart. And then you had like the main character, the title character, who was goofy and got into trouble, but often saved the day. And that just went from a dog to a car.
Right.
So it was exactly the same thing.
I suppose you could also say Josie and the Pussycats is the same as Captain Caveman.
Pretty much,
for more or less the same reasons, yeah.
And then you brought up, you know, you mentioned the Flintstones and the Jetsons.
Yeah.
Exactly the same show, just in a different time period.
Hard to reuse the backgrounds, though.
Well, that's true. So, I mean, those two were mirror images of each other. So Hanna-Barbera, they did have their weak spots, but I loved them so much as a kid, and that's what I grew up on. So those and Looney Tunes, they will always be awesome in my eyes. But I think you could make a case for Hanna-Barbera being a little overrated in some spots. Now, Looney Tunes, I don't think you can make a case for that. So don't even bother trying. Just save your emails.
Well, no, I don't think anybody will write in, quite honestly. I don't think that there is a reasonable argument. I would like to read it because I always like to be challenged in that way. I like to hear if someone is able to sort of, you know, gore the sacred dinosaur, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although I did, at one point on Facebook several months ago, I was just thinking out loud and I just wrote, you know, which is better, Tom and Jerry or Sylvester and Tweety?
Mm.
And the overwhelming majority said Tom and Jerry. There was a lot of poo-pooing in Sylvester and Tweety. So there are those out there that don't enjoy Looney Tunes or don't like them as much as other cartoons.
Do you know why that might be, though? Because Tweety deserves everything that he gets.
Yeah.
Because he's an annoying wee fart. That's Tweety's problem.
Well, Jerry's the same way. He's asking for it.
I don't know about that. I mean,
Tom all the time. I felt sorry for Tom.
Most of the time, Jerry's just trying to make a living. He's trying to lie there in his sardine can bed. And Tom's usually the antagonist, and then Jerry just gives back.
Jerry's a troublemaker. Tom's just trying to get a little snack, get a little bit of Thanksgiving nosh from the dinner table, and then Jerry comes up and starts banging the pots and brings in Mammy to yell at them both. And, you know, it's Jerry's a little troublemaker.
That's my boy.
Mike. Yeah, exactly.
Good stuff. All right, we'll do it again next week. The email address for any correspondence of any kind is
the usual address at gmail.com.
And you can join the Facebook group and we'll open up a thread and we'll talk about this further, see if we can get some responses for next week. Till next time, I am Spike Nesmith. He is Paul Higginbotham. Good night.
Good night. Radio 6 International.